Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Karen White. She's a New York Times bestselling author, and she's out with her brand new book, The Christmas Spirits on Trad Street. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Berkeley. Karen, I love books that are set in the South, as yours are, and I know people call it Dixie Lit and all kinds of different fun names for it, but this one involves our good friend Melanie Middleton Trenholm, and she's a real estate broker in Charleston. There's just something historical about Charleston, so for those who might be new to the series, this has been going on a while, can you kind of set up where Melanie is in life?
In this book, Melanie is married. She has somehow, she has 18-month-old twins and a 17-year-old stepdaughter. She is in her old house that she has a love-hate relationship with, and she's also having marriage issues, mostly due to her inability to trust and her OCD personality.
And she sees dead people.
And she sees dead people. She doesn't advertise that, so she tries to pretend that she doesn't. But of course, that gets her into trouble as well.
That may throw people for a loop, because Christmas book about spirits, they think, well, everybody thinks A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Not really what's going on here, though, is it?
No, it's not. Each book in the series has a mystery. This certainly has a mystery. It's a Revolutionary War historical mystery. Melanie sees the dead people because these dead people need her help in solving a mystery, and so she is reluctantly forced into figuring out why that ugly specter in the cistern that has appeared in her backyard is appearing in her stepdaughter's bedroom with a malevolent glare, I guess you could call it.
And it's a little creepy to think about, but as people who live in the South, I read a lot of Southern literature. There's a lot of history there, and there is a lot of spirit and energy from our forefathers, right?
Oh, absolutely. And Charleston is supposedly, if not the most haunted city in America, it's certainly one of the most haunted. It's also one of the oldest, and it's had, you know, look at the history, you know, from the early, you know, the Native Americans on to, you know, Civil War, Revolutionary War. You know, there were, you know, during World War II, there was a Nazi prisoner camp there, so lots of history.
Did Charleston find you, or did you find Charleston as a location for this series?
You know, isn't that interesting? I think it was a mutual love affair. The first time I ever visited Charleston, I felt that I had come home, and I just felt compelled to write about it. And then just recently, my daughter did our ancestry and found out that we actually had ancestors in the 1700s who actually lived in Charleston. So there you go.
Well, and what is it about that place? I mean, I've never been there myself. A good friend of mine has traveled there and talks about the row houses, the colorful atmosphere of it. Was it always that bright and happy of a city?
No. I mean, they've had, you know, the typhoid epidemics and you know, fires. They had an earthquake. So no, lots of tragedy. But the people in Charleston, in hurricanes, of course, we all remember Hurricane Hugo. They just have this stoic resilience. They're, you know, the native Charlestonians are very proud of their history and their family lineage because they have survived so much and they haven't gone away. So I think that's, I mean, if you look at, if you walk during the beautiful houses south of Broad, which is a historic district, and you see the pride these people keep in their houses with their gorgeous gardens, it is, that is what's so colorful. And those row houses you're talking about are the Painted Ladies on East Battery. And most of the houses, though, are not. They're brick, they're, you know, white, they're colonial, you know, antebellum. But it is a bright and beautiful city because of the stunning architecture.
Character development is so important for you. You've developed so many characters throughout this series. What is the distinction between developing a character who's a spirit throughout a book versus a real human being?
Well, with spirits, I get to really, you know, I get to really play with that because, you know, whether you believe or not, who knows? So I get to do, you know, whatever I want. But I like to imagine what that person was like during their lives and what unfinished business they might have left behind, whether they want people to discover what they left behind or what they don't want people to discover. And that sort of determines whether their spirit's going to be a good one or not so good one.
Do spirits always have a quality of either being good or bad, or are there neutral spirits?
Oh, I think they're neutral spirits. I mean, you hear about, dog spirits and children spirits, and I think those, as the research that I've done into the paranormal, those are the spirits that really don't know that they have passed and need somebody to sort of show them the way.
One of the things in the book that I like is the relationship between Melanie and her sister Jane. And Jane's working as the kid's nanny. But with their relationship, it seems like Melanie's really put together. Jane's kind of a ditz.
A ditz, you said?
Yeah.
Well, I guess in the previous book, The Guest on South Battery, that's where we meet Jane, and we understand that she was an orphan. She was raised as an orphan. She did not know who her parents were. And she also has the capacity to see dead people. And that has always separated her. She's never really had a family. She's never had a serious relationship. She's been a professional nanny. She's a little bit of a ditz when it comes to meeting men.
Well, and the thing I also like is the hook with the ABBA songs in here. And I love ABBA's music. But
me too.
It seemed so out of the ordinary, and it just surprised me, and I loved it as a hook. Can you kind of explain how ABBA figures into this and why you chose that particular band?
Yeah, so in the very first book, The House on Trad Street, when I'm, first introducing Melanie to my readers, we know that she sees dead people, but we also know that she doesn't like it. She tries to block them out. And as a child, she learned to block them out by singing really, really loudly to make them go away. And, because I'm the author and I can do these things, I happen to adore ABBA. And so I thought, okay, so Melanie's going to love ABBA, and that's why she's going to sing ABBA songs really, really loudly to drown out the ghosts so that they will go away.
It doesn't seem like ABBA would be a popular group for somebody in the South.
Well, you know what? ABBA actually has sold more albums than the Beatles. So they are very popular. They've been around since the 70s, so why not?
I'm chatting with Karen White about her brand new book, The Christmas Spirits on Trad Street. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold. If you've never read any in this series, go back and reread the several that have come for it. But you don't need to reread it in order to understand what's going on. Yet, using Christmas as a backdrop for a book, it seems like just a manna from heaven for an author to be able to use all the things that conjure up in our minds with Christmas, because it lets the reader use their imagination, because everybody understands Christmas. Is it easy to write about Christmas, or is that still a challenge?
Well, every book is a challenge, but yes, when we decided we were going to set this book at Christmas time, especially Christmas in Charleston, I've been to Charleston around the Christmas season, and it's Charleston's beautiful anyway, but when it's decorated for Christmas, it's really special. And this gave me a huge opportunity for new adventures to send Melanie and Jack out on, new settings with the parties and the whole progressive dinner that she has to set up. It really was manna from heaven, all these opportunities that wouldn't be available if I were writing about these characters in another time of year.
When you speak in Charleston, when you talk to readers from there, are they demanding that you have accuracy in your novels to match, the reality of Charleston? Cause it seems like people demand more accuracy from fiction writers than they do from politicians.
Yeah, I think you're right. Luckily, I have had some of the most wonderful mails and emails and contact with Charlestonians who can't believe that I don't live in Charleston, because I do get so much right, and that's because I'm a little obsessive about getting it right. There have been times when I've gotten it wrong and people have, called me out on it, and I apologized and fixed it, and won't make that mistake again. But in general, I've been very happy to report that I've gotten 99% of it correct.
Well, and the whole idea about these historical things that you put into the book, it's not historical fiction, but nonetheless, you do cover a lot of periods of history. Do you still get the sense as an author that you're kind of living through that period as you get to know the characters that you develop from the colonial periods?
Oh, definitely. I'm a history nerd, and I think you can't love history without imagining yourself living in those times. So, definitely.
I loved your story that I read several places. It's been published now about your skipping school when you were a preteen. Can you kind of take me through that story? Because I love the whole idea of a female living in the South, reading a book to skip school.
Yes. Well, this is fun. So both my parents are from Mississippi. My whole family is from the South. But my father's job took us to London. So we were living in London. I was going to the American school in London. And I got from the library Gone with the Wind. And my mother saw it, and she was like, Karen, you can't read that book. So, of course, I had to read it in hiding. But as soon as I started it, I could not put that book down. I would, you know, I took the tube to school every day. I would miss my stop and have to come back. And when I got home from school, I probably faked sick so I wouldn't have to go to cheerleading practice or whatever. And I went right home. I skipped my homework. I read through the night. And then when it was time to go to school the next morning, I was not going to stop reading. So I pretended I left for the tube. And then I went up to the rooftop of our building on Regent's Park. And luckily it was a nice day. And I skipped school so I could finish reading Gone with the Wind. And that is I'm such a nerd. That was the only time I ever skipped school in my entire life.
And does that have the same effect for you that it does when I hear a song that happened at some meaningful moment in my life? Whenever you see anything about Gone with the Wind, it takes you back to that rooftop?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know what you're saying about songs, too. You know, I can hear a song and I can actually smell what I was smelling at the time that I heard that song. But yes, definitely. And I can even remember, like, what side of the page certain comments, you know, certain dialogue was on or certain favorite parts were on. It was just one of those books that lingered forever.
I have that same effect happen to me, that I can remember what side of the page, but it seems like if I need to go back and find a quote, sometimes I'm wrong on it and I'm trying to convince my brain that I'm not.
Right. Well, it's harder now that I'm older, but when I was younger, I was much better at it.
When you hear the whole idea of writing books that are set in the South, and, you know, you see the literature that comes out, there's a lot of it. And so is there a certain genre and a certain type of author that you're associated with that people only read that? Or do you find your readers come from a whole wide variety of things that they read?
Oh, yeah. My readers are all over the place. I have a lot of readers like in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and to be honest, I think it's because they like to read about warmer climates in the wintertime. But there is something about the South. I mean, look at the popularity of Southern fiction, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird and Gone with the Wind and Pat Conroy's books. I think there's a fascination with the South because it is a little different. It is slower paced. It is, you know, the heat and humidity. Yes, heat and humidity exist everywhere, but it doesn't affect the way people talk and walk like it does in the South. And, you know, the way we embrace the crazy people in our family, it's you know, we put them on our front porch and you know, show them off. So I think people like reading about something that's different.
Well, and this might be an unfair stereotype, but it seems like the South holds their secrets more, and that makes for more interesting literature.
Yes, because we all have skeletons in our closets, and there's some things we don't want other people to know. You know, we're all about politeness, and if something's going to look rude or ugly, we do want to hide that, unless it's our crazy aunt, whoever, you know, then we want to show her off on the front porch.
All right. The book is The Christmas Spirits on Trad Street by Karen White. The book is available now wherever fine books are sold from the good folks at Berkeley. Karen, just a fantastic offering here that we can enjoy going into the Christmas season, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Christmas in Dixie.